Hello and welcome to the Unofficial Controller Podcast, your weekly gaming podcast, episode 185. Simran Whittam, founder of Format, with me, George, and this week joined by RGT and our special guest, Simran. Biggest night in gaming to my lonely night in with a cup of noodle and mumsy. How's it going, Simran?
I'm very well, thank you, George, mate.
Thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule, especially this close to Format going live. It's an honour and a privilege. Another honour and a privilege of mine is obviously this week again joined by RGT. How are you?
I'm amazing. Thank you very much, George.
I'm surprised we can get you on at this point, RGT. You are literally the biggest thing in gaming right now. I don't know what the hell's going on, but...
You're too kind. I don't know about that.
Okay. Well, let's get all this out the way. Let's get to know Simran through the medium of the games he's been playing. As I ask you guys, what have you been playing? Simran, what games, pray tell, have been dancing across your fingers this gaming week?
So there has only been one game that has consumed my life, and it's going to make me sound like the most basic human being alive, but it has consumed me: Baldur's Gate.
Oh,
it's everything I've been waiting for.
And what are you playing that on?
I'm playing it on PC at the moment. Well, I say PC, my very, very glorified, very high spec though gaming laptop, because I am a console peasant at heart, I won't lie. I am a PlayStation fanboy a little bit, I won't lie. I am waiting for the PlayStation port, but I couldn't resist. I needed to jump into Baldur's Gate, and I just installed it on my laptop, but I am waiting for that PS5 port.
Okay, so are you tentatively nibbling at it on the PC just in case you get too involved, or are you just going all in regardless?
Well, at the moment, it's not by choice. I would have gone all in by now, but obviously with Format around the corner, my time is quite limited at the moment with how much I can play. But I'm nibbling at it, but not by choice. So, but then I am sort of holding myself back because I am aware I'm going to have to restart this all over again. So I'm kind of treating it like a bit of a test run to get familiar with the controls, because this is actually my second Baldur's Gate. I played the original Baldur's Gate when it was produced by BioWare, because I'm a huge BioWare fanboy as well.
Yeah.
But I never played the second Baldur's Gate, so I'm kind of teaching this as a way to get back into it. You know, I've played Dungeons & Dragons in the past, but this is the first time playing it in a digital format, so I'm trying to really get into the groove of the game before I jump.
And how are you finding that, and how, if I could say a comparison to the original Baldur's Gate, which is extreme comparison, I know, because that game is looking a little bit tight now, yeah, but how does it compare? In terms of sort of maybe gameplay, obviously graphics are massively improved, but what are the changes have you noticed along the way?
I feel like for me, just the actual depth of the world and the knowledge that is there, and just the attention to detail and care that's been done by Larian Studios is so good. Like, Baldur's Gate 1 will always have a special place in my heart. Like, the reason Dragon Age Origins, also developed by BioWare, which is my favourite game of all time, is awesome. But the Larian have just taken it to a whole new level with the way they've just really thought about how intertwined every little system in this world. And this is just what I've played so far, because I'm one of these, when it's a game I'm really excited for, I watch very little reviews like on it, just to like get the gist of it. I won't watch gameplays, I won't watch content creators playing it, because I want to go into it as blind as possible.
Yes.
So from what I'm experiencing so far, Larian have basically upped the scale in like the actual attention to detail of the world, which obviously they have at their fingertips because the technology's evolved now and you can do more in video games since back then. But for me personally, so far, it really captures what D&D really is like as much as it can in a video game format.
And that's the token sum of your gaming. It's just been completely absorbed, sponge-like, by Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, obviously with formats like events coming up and stuff, like, our time gets very, very limited. I do play a bunch of the games that our exhibitors actually send forward, though, because we like to actually try out builds of the games, see what they're like before we put them on showcase. So I've actually been trying like a bunch of the different games there, but that's more from like a work standpoint and looking at them from that perspective. My own enjoyment, Baldur's Gate, has just absolutely consumed my life. But I am hoping once October is done, I am making time for Starfield as well, because that is on my list to try out.
Is there anything within that cluster of games that you've been shown that you would like to give a special mention to, or is that like a no, can't do that right now?
Oh, no, there's plenty of games that I love talking about. So we've got Merge Games coming with Smarland, which I absolutely love because I'm all about survival games, crafting games where you build your own fortifications, build bases, things like that. There's the Bonsai Collective with Lunar Abyss. I don't know if you guys have seen that. It's been like, it's basically a weird sort of first-person shooter horror. It's kind of like Doom mixed with Cube, mixed with like this very abstract like narrative. It's really, really good. Like I'm really enjoying it so far from what I played. So if you're into that horror
list,
we tried to get as many horror games for October as you can imagine.
Perfect.
We've tried to do that. And then there's been a few other little ones. There's a racing game called from Stampede from Secret Mode, which is actually being announced not next week, the week after. So you're getting a little exclusive there.
Oh, we love those.
A lot of racing games at this next event, so I hope you like racing games, because for some reason, every game studio decided to have racing games this year. So, yeah, I've got a lot of them at this event. And I'll probably say they're the three ones that are standing out to me the most at the moment. And, oh, and there's also Playtonic's games as well. Playtonic are bringing so many games with them to this next event. I'm really excited. We're announcing a bunch of those next week.
Well, as soon as you mentioned video games, I looked up and saw RGT sort of peering from behind a tree like some sort of park pervert. So he's obviously fired up for a little bit of racing asphalt action at format.
Definitely.
RGT, it's only right and proper that I ask you what you've been playing.
It's been a bit thin on the ground this week. It's been a busy week.
Hang on a minute. Bada Binkster. I want a T-shirt of RGT peering out from behind a tree in a long trench coat.
Oh, no.
By the end of the episode.
That is not the image I want of me on a T-shirt.
No, that is how he has to turn up to format now, is his Halloween costume.
Yeah, this is getting out of hand here.
No, he has to turn up as a tree, and he basically just appears from behind her.
Law heard it first now. He's going to be turning up in a trench coat to format, part pervert style. I've already notified the front of house staff that this guy is not a part pervert, but that is the costume. So just
My image has just done a nosedive.
My revenge is pure but sweet. It's righteous as well.
This is all about the Switch, isn't it? This goes back to the Switch. Anyway,
you can't throw these aspersions around and not expect to find a couple of video game horses' heads in your bed.
I found one today. I probably found two. Right. So it's been a bit thin on the ground. Bit more game deck I've been playing. I don't know. You weren't on the show when I was talking about game deck, were you, George? I don't think.
I was taking a very well-earned break, I should imagine.
Yeah. Game deck was the game I found on this Nintendo eShop. It's.
I did hear about this in the edit suite, actually.
It's very interesting. I'm really enjoying it. It's like isometric sort of adventure. Sort of a lot of point and click game set in the future where you are a game deck who goes into these virtual worlds and helps people out in the virtual space. Really good game for the money. It's cheap, but very, you know, graphics are good, good story. You have to really sort of try and solve
one,
the
one question I had, if I may quickly interrupt. What is the graphical style of this game?
It's like it's got that sort of futuristic sort of steampunk look, but it's like an isometric look down, so you control a player rather than a point and click where you'd control, you know, your pointer. But I think for especially when you're playing on the go on the Switch, which is perfect for you, George, it looks really good. It does look really good. I think it's a nice graphic style. It is, you know, I love that. I wouldn't say it's like a high res, but it's got that real nice look to it. Night times, the puddles and that look really good. And I think I'm surprised it's as cheap as it is, really. I think it's not a long game, about 11 hours, and I think I'm about 3-4 hours in. But really good game for the money. Then on Wednesday, me and Bald Border carried on our GTA 3 Definitive Edition playthrough on live stream over on YouTube. That's going down really well at the moment. So a few of the guys are been jumping across and been having a chat with them, so that's been good fun. So I think we must be over 10 hours into that now, but we're going to try and do all three. So we'll go on to, when we're finished that, we'll go on to Vice City and we'll carry on every Wednesday. So don't forget that, 7:30, everyone, on my YouTube channel.
You are a glutton for punishment, aren't you?
Oh, certainly.
Looking forward to the remote control missions.
On San Andreas, yeah. Actually, they're a lot easier on the Definitive Edition. They are a lot easier on the Definitive Edition. I struggle.
What do you have for that? Is it controls?
Well, it's I don't know if you've played any definitive edition, have you, George? Yeah.
No, only the classics. I've not dusted off the definitive edition.
Well, they've got a bit more ease of life now. So you've got you're obviously on the original GTA 3 and Vice City, you didn't have your right analog camera controls. But now you've got that, and you've also got your weapons wheel, like you would have in Red Dead or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
So that makes it a lot easier. And also on your map, you can set a destination and you get a sat-nav route to it, which you didn't have on the original.
That's better.
So they've made a bit ease of life on it, which does make the game a lot easier. But I think they realised in San Andreas the remote control missions were tough, and I think they've toned them down a bit. So I think with the higher-res graphics, better controls, it's made it a lot smoother to do. I think it'll take two or three attempts, but a lot better. Yeah, definitely a lot better. So yeah, been enjoying that. Played about another 2-3 hours of Final Fantasy 16. I'm loving that at the moment.
Really?
I really am loving that game. I did say last week, I went through that typical thing we all do. I've started too many big games at once.
Mm.
I've had to thin them down. I'd started Starfield, Final Fantasy 16. I still had Tears of the Kingdom on the go, and I'd had to just stop a bit. I've put Starfield on the back burner for a minute. I was about 11, 12 hours in. And
So of all the tissue paper, wet tissue to break under strain, it was you and Starfield.
Mm. I don't know whether I was expecting something else. Don't get me wrong. I've always struggled with Bethesda games anyway. I've never been a massive fan of Bethesda games, but I thought of this as this big space exploration, but the immersion is too breaking for me when, you know, in your ship load screen and you're out, you know, around a planet.
Let me just skew around the sim run there. You're obviously in your what you've been playing. Forgive me. Because you've not actually played it, but you're hoping to play it.
Yes.
But in your what you've been playing section, you alluded to the fact that once format's done and dusted, you're going to move across to Starfield. Is this what you expected to hear, or is this like, oh, stop talking RGT, you're ruining it for me?
No, it is interesting to hear, because as I said, when there's a game I'm really excited for, I only watch reviews just to see what kind of like the current content. I won't even listen to like the full review. Like I'll look at like kind of the end scores, and if I start to see, like, say the product's around 5 or 6 out of 10, then I'll start looking a bit more in depth and think, actually, is this me? But if a product's scoring generally around 8, 9, 10 or across the board, then I'll just kind of like leave it. Go into the experience blind, because for me that's where I get a lot of the magic of what makes a video game special, when I go into that experience blind.
Agreed. So
and everyone I've heard at the moment is absolutely raving about Starfield, so
yeah,
he's actually the first person I've actually heard actually make some form of criticism on it, so it's interesting to get perspective of you saying that it wasn't for you. Like I'm a huge Bethesda fan, but I'd say more old school Bethesda. Like I'm going to sound so basic, but I do like the Elder Scrolls Skyrim, original Skyrim, before they re-released it for absolutely everything, including Alexa.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do love some of the older ones. And even though it's not a Bethesda title, like, you know, Fallout New Vegas, which was developed by Obsidian, but I love the Fallout franchise. Fallout New Vegas is my second favorite game of all time. So it's interesting to hear that perspective that someone isn't enjoying Starfield.
Yeah, I think it's more, spaceship controls, player controls, all really good, brilliant. And I've said before, I mean, I know this is locked at 30 FPS, but it's brilliant. It's as smooth as silk. I don't know what they've done behind the scenes to have that as smooth as it is for a 30 FPS game, but it plays really well. I had no glitches, no bugs. It's been really good. But I think I went into it with this really open expanse of space exploration. And I find it a bit immersive breaking. I think if you think of it as like Bethesda doing Mass Effect, I think that's more down the line where it is. So, yeah, that's for me anyway. I mean, I think once you get in, I think the first 10 hours are a bit slow anyway. But I think the story I find quite good. I think that's where most people criticise, but I quite like the story of it. But I just find it a bit, you know, it's a bit monotonous to keep going and then load screen, going and load. It's not as free and open as you explore as you'd like. You know, your cut scenes to land in your ship and then load screens to get off a planet and then load screens to get in your ship. There's them little things I find. I think it's something you'll probably get used to once you're 15, 20 hours into it. But I think for me at the moment, because I'd started so many games, I had to think, right, I need to drop one. I think I'll go back to Starfield. I'm not dropping it permanently. But I thought, which one of the games am I really enjoying the most at the moment? And for me, that was Final Fantasy 16. because it was more, I think, Starfield, if you've got restricted time, Starfield's going to be tough because you can play an hour and a half, 2 hours on that game and you've probably made no progress. You've had a bit of a storyline, you've gone to planet and that's it. You need a good 4 or 5 hour session at a time to get the most out of that game. Whereas I find with Final Fantasy 16, you can jump in for an hour, have a few battles, go to your hideout, go somewhere else and come back. You make a bit more progression in a small amount of time, which is ideal for me at the moment. So that's Final Fantasy 16 for me at the moment. But I will go back to Starfield, I think, because I think, you know, the game itself, I think there is a good game there. I think I was probably just slightly thinking different to what I thought it would be, if that makes sense.
May I interrupt you? Because a few weeks ago, I came up with a new segment. It was so great that I've forgotten what it's called, and I think I even gave it a theme tune, and I've totally even forgot how that goes. But I set you the challenge. It's not on everybody's lips, this is, of playing a version somewhere of G1 Jockey.
Yes.
Have you taken the plunge?
No. I bought the game.
This is not how this works.
No, but I will come back to me on that next week. I will be playing it, and then I'll be telling you why that is a terrible game to play.
How dare you? If you haven't played it by next week, the live stream that week needs to be you playing it with motion controls.
There's this obsession on the Discord of me playing this with motion control, so I'm getting a bit worried this is going down the OnlyFans route here, but it ain't happening. But, well, we'll cut to my last game.
You need to be monetizing that. You want to see the rules?
No, I think we don't. I think it's reverse monetization where we pay people pay us not to do it.
Yeah. And finally, EAFC 24. So I'd already played the beta of that. So that came this week. I've only put about an hour in, so I've just been investigating that a bit more.
On Switch?
No. Saying that, though, after all the FIFA Legacy editions on the Switch, the Switch version, I was like, oh, hello, this isn't just a reskinned game from 10 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think they might have...
They've unlocked a second level of powerhouse ability in the Switch. A little CPU they didn't even know they had. All of a sudden, it's running all these games.
I was quite impressed with that when I saw the trailer for that. But yeah, I've got it on the PS5. Fanny just started into it again, so just picking a new team, League 2, my usual thing. Might work the leagues, but
is it a little bit? Although, yeah, nice to have. You know, you can see the individual hair follicles on Chiefy's face as he jumps up in a replay. Headers the ball over the line, whatever that is. I mean, English sports, I don't even know what they are anymore. But in this soccer simulator game...
Football, not soccer.
In this soccer simulator game, is it more of the same?
No, it's... Graphically, you won't see a lot of change, but behind the scenes, there's been quite a lot of change, especially because I play career mode. So in career mode, there is quite a lot of changes. I think they've, from the... breakaway from FIFA, I think they've obviously put a bit more in and thought, right, we're going to really make this a really decent one now with some decent changes. It's a lot more, you'd probably like it, it's a bit more tactical side to it, a bit more sim side to it. So you now have to hire individual coaches for different training methods, for defence, for midfield, for attack, for goalkeepers. And you still
Simran, are you a big FIFA fan or EA Football FIFA fan?
Very casual, like very, very casual, even though Farmat is working with a client on a sports title. So, yeah.
I don't think you meant to say that on air.
Yeah, I can say that much. Okay. But yeah, very casual. Like for me, I am the annoying guy who does not take FIFA seriously when he plays it. For me, it is about fun. Like I don't care whether I win or lose in it or not. In today's climate, it is very hard to find someone who wants to play FIFA and not take it seriously.
Yeah, RGT. Oh. Dipping boiling teal on the crotch because it took you 1-0 up with Boston FC.
On gameplay of the game, it is a bit different from last year. It's a bit more... You have to be a bit more possession-based, a bit more passing, which is good. I like slowed the game down a bit. So far, I'm really enjoying it. I think it is that much of a different challenge that it's definitely worth it, whereas each year before on FIFA, you had a slightly different change, and then they ran with it the next year and made another little change. This seems to be quite a big few changes in one go. I don't play the online mode, so I couldn't answer for that, but really enjoying it. Yeah, I think that's I think when you get enough changes in a game series, you know, it reignites you to play it more. So I think I will be putting more hours in that. And as you know, with FIFA, I play it for the year, but it's every time I play my main big game, then I go and play FIFA for a week or two and then play another big game. It's always that filling game in between. A bit like you with MLB, really, George. You keep ticking along with it in the background.
It's not a filling game. That's a way of life.
Well, yeah, it is for you, but...
baby.
Yeah, so that is pretty much what I've been playing. I will add on the end there, we've got a new category on the Discord, everyone. This is kindly being organised by Digital Monkery on there, which is Challenge Accepted. He's doing a monthly challenge on
a game.
That's
a good name, isn't it? They're brilliant, good boys, yeah. Aren't they?
They are good boys. So they've done, we've got Challenge Accepted. So it's a monthly, first of every month, he'll be putting a new challenge on. Post your high scores. He's doing a league table. Just
what's the first game? Do I stand any chance?
The first game is Tony Hawk's Pro Skater on the warehouse level, highest score. But we're recommending, if you're doing this, do it on the remake from a few years ago, because then you've got the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 controls. So you can do reverts and you can get a better combo. I know a few of the guys are playing on emulation, playing the original game. It's going to be a bit hard to get the score. So if you've got the remake of Pro Skater, I think it was 1 and 2 they done in a double pack, and I think we had it on PlayStation Plus. I'm not sure if it's on Xbox.
Are we giving prizes for this?
No, it's just pure bragging rights, this is. This is just pure bragging rights.
There's no silverware on the table?
No, just so you can be the champion of the Challenge Accepted for a month.
The people's champion.
Yep, that's what it is. So, yeah, okay. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, warehouse level. There's already a couple of guys have been posting their high scores on there, and then I think maybe once a week they'll readjust the league table, see who's top, and, yeah, give it a go, because I should be having a go later on. And I've got a feeling... Early on, I think Rose Space Monk might grab this because he's a bit of a whiz at the old pro skater. I can see him getting a million plus score on there. So keep watch his space. Yeah, he's decent. So I reckon he'll be the guy to beat. Yeah, but thanks, Digital Monkery, for organising that. That's much appreciated. And that's another little gem we've got on there that people can play.
Okay. Well, if that's all said and done, it's only time for me to quickly sweep up what I've been playing. Obviously, you know, when you live this hectic lifestyle, you got to find good games to take on the go, RGT, on the Switch. And I was browsing the eStore, which has almost become like my digital CEX, as far as I'm concerned. And what I was kicking that around, and it's rapidly approaching spooky season, and I saw Resident Evil 0, Resident Evil 1 remake, literally $7. And I thought, yes, let's do this. I've never played 0. Let's give it a go. He looks great on there. It's the HD remaster. The controls, they're not full tank controls, but obviously it's still got that strange scenario where you kind of change direction when you flip between screens. So one minute you're walking backwards and the screen changes, you start walking forwards, but you want to walk backwards.
Mm. There's still all that sort of fixed camera, I suppose, is it?
Still so fixed camera, yeah. So it's got a little bit of that going on, but quite enjoying that. We talked of BioWare earlier in the show. I'm still munching through Knights of the Old Republic on Switch as well. Ouch.
Is it a hard sell now?
It's taking blood from me every turn. I'm still enjoying it, but my goodness gracious me, they left nothing out of bringing this real vanilla port of this game to Switch. No touchscreen interactivity, nothing. It's the same OG game.
Literally just the ROM dumped on the Switch, is it?
And it burns a little bit at times. It does burn. It does. But underneath all of that, the writing and the story seem to hold it together. Some of the side stories that you pick up along the way are pretty good. Landing on Tatooine has been a little bit of a mix-up for the story, so it's been interesting to carry that on. I'm still having memories of when I played this on original Xbox, so that's kind of nostalgic in a way. I'm trying to think what else I've been playing. Oh, got through to the last boss on Mario Odyssey. That's been an absolute joy. I just got a little bit annoyed with Bowser's out of nowhere tail sweeps. I can't...
There's no pattern to it that you can...
There is, but... I don't know, the skills are slightly behind where Bowser's tail movement comes, so I seem to get swiped in the chops just as I want to press jump. which is the story of my life, if I'm honest with you. And I think, I downloaded SnowRunner PS5 edition. I'm intrigued. I want to give that a go. I think we spoke off air. I don't think I've been able to get on air about this, but I was doing, I was in a scenario where I could take some very large trucks in an experience around a quarry.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was driving around, someone was saying to me, oh, you know, diff lock this and diff lock that and first gear this. And all I could think, all of a sudden, everything just faded out. And I realized how realistic SnowRunner is. It was absolutely game-changing. Crawling around this quarry at probably 2 miles an hour, going through mud, up the sides of things, diff lock on, diff lock off. That game is good.
There's something so satisfying about that game. I mean, 5 years ago, I'd have never said I'd have ever played a game like that.
No.
And then me and you looked into it and played online together.
I would say, as I've said before, it's the Dark Souls of driving game. Because I did chuck it on the Switch the other day just to get a few of the missions done to start opening the area up. And I was thinking, I got in a situation with a trailer and I was like, oh, God. I just don't even want to be alive anymore. So that's how that got me. It's one of those articulated trailers, you know, the one with the moving bogey on the front. So whatever you do happens to that, but then happens, it's all in reverse. Whatever you should have done, you should have just done it and it would have worked.
Yeah.
Anyway, all that said and done, I want to draw a line under there because I think we've killed that section there, haven't we? What you've been playing. I'm very disappointed, may I add, that G1 Jockey is sat untouched on the shelf. I was hoping you'd turned up today in your jockey colours.
We're going back to this again. I'm not wearing a jockey colours.
Why do you say it like this? It's disappointing to me that you're not putting the effort in. I would be wearing jockey colours.
You should be just happy that I'm actually going to play this game, let alone dress up as a jockey and whip a horse.
Simran's a massive fan. I'll be honest. He came on today only on the proviso that you'd played it.
I'm exceptionally disappointed in you right now, RGT. In fact, I think we should just cancel. In fact, I'm going. Right, I'll see you in a bit.
Listen,
right.
He'll play it by close of play today. There's a business sort of wording that you want to probably normally send shivers down the spine, but right now he sent shivers up him in a good way, Simran. He's gonna do it by close of play today. You know. He's big business now, is RGT. That's the sort of language he understands. Jockey colours, wet wipes, motion control,
why
green screen. You tell me.
You suggested it.
I just thought I'd chuck it out there.
Oh, my God.
If that wasn't news, this is. We've scoured the very darkest range of the internet to bring you the latest stories. First up, this is a kicker. Maybe one last race. Sony and Polyphony Digital have announced plans to shut down online service of PS4? That's what we're calling the PS4 now.
You're Switch now, aren't you? That's PS4 now.
PS4 exclusive racing sim. I think I saw a meme on the Discord the other day that said, George says he's tired within 30 seconds of the show. You know it's going to be a car crash. You're absolutely right. I think it was Elliot. You're absolutely right. Gran Turismo Sport, the game, was largely been superseded by Gran Turismo 7. Will have its online functionality unplugged from the 31st of January 2024. Now, this is in here because I was a big fan of Sport when it first came out, but the thing that holds Sport together is obviously the online. I know they added lots of bits after, but this is going to feel very bare bones. The news was shared on the official Gran Turismo website prior to the online servers closing from 1st December 2023. All add-ons will be removed from sale on PS Store. You'll still be able to access the add-ons you've already purchased, but you won't be able to buy any more from that date. After the end of service date, it will no longer be possible to utilize online services such as the community, open lobby, and sport mode, nor online features items such as custom liveries or post reads. The offline portions of the game can still be played, including purchased add-ons. While all the cars in your garage and offline progress will still be usable, anything online will be going away. That includes custom liveries, purchasing items from the mileage store, and obviously all online modes. Any online-related trophies will be unattainable from the closure date too. Of course, server shutdowns have always been a bit of a bummer, and GT Sport's online competition focus means a lot of content will be going away. However, as mentioned earlier, Gran Turismo 7 has very much replaced it, so this announcement probably won't come as much of a surprise. If you have any unfinished business in GT Sport, though, you've about 4 months left to enjoy its online services. GT Sport, gentlemen, launched at a time, and it got a little bit of a kick in, I must say. I found enjoyment in it and didn't really think of players as anything other than bots that made the whole experience that little bit more challenging and certainly more enjoyable from a realism point of view. Although there were issues with people being a bit spammy and playing in a probably not very fair way, I found the whole penalty system tended to keep people in check. Simran, did you give Gran Turismo a sport, a wheel out the garage when it launched, or did you ignore it because it's not your cup of tea?
It's not really my cup of tea, to be honest with you. Like, in today's climate, I get a very finite amount of time to play a certain amount of games, and I'm kind of your RPG, you know, story driven, narrative, cute indie games, action adventure type of guy. Like racing games, they're brilliant, and don't get me wrong, the Gran Turismo franchise is amazing. They've done some amazing work. I can't distinguish some of those cars from real life with how much detail they've gone into them. But racing games have always been kind of like the back burner of the games that I'm kind of interested in.
RGT, I think you were there day and date for sport, were you not?
Yeah, I was there day and date, and then obviously when I got my sim rigged and I started playing more seriously online, put a lot of hours into that. I think the problem with GT Sport, I think people were expecting like the original GTs, so you didn't have that sort of career path. So, which is probably highlighted the issue now because the servers are shutting down. This is going to be a very, very bare bones experience.
I mean, question for me, for both of you, feel free to answer. I mean, GT Sport, as good as it was it only ever a stepping stone to nail that FIA approved functionality before launching into GT7?
Yeah, I think it probably was. It always felt like they needed to put something out because it had been a while. So let's put this one out, see where it goes, see where the online goes. And then obviously you've got the Gran Turismo World Tour, which you can watch on YouTube, going around the world, which was highly successful. And then I think they realised that and then carried on creating the actual career path part of the game and chucked it all in to make 7. But I think it was partly test bed, partly get the FIA on board and partly see how the online will work, which obviously turned out to be a great success. But like I say, the only issue with that is now you're shutting the online servers down. It's not a lot there to play as a game itself.
Sadly, it's going to become nothing more than a footnote in people's collections or another coaster for that hot brew that you need to get through your next big action game. RGT, what's this next bit of news, friend?
We might need a bigger boat. It's that time of year again when we're all starting to see the odd delay or two, and the latest one to join the list is the update for the spooky fishing sim Dredge. Black Salt Games has today issued an announcement via social media about the delay of the first paid DLC, the Iron Rig, which will no longer make Q4 2023. It will now be arriving at some point in 2024. We plan to spend a few months crafting this exciting addition and release it in Q4 this year. However, as we progressed, we were faced with the reality, given the time of year, we'd need more lead time to coordinate our marketing and make launch as exciting as it could be. To make up for this, the team plans to deliver some additional content instead, which it will share more details about soon, along with information about availability and cost.
Now, Simran, if I may, I'm going to grab the wheel. In fact, no, it's the tiller of this boat. I'm going to spin it straight round in your direction. Black Salt Games, do you know them?
No, actually. They're kind of one of the ones that slipped under my radar.
Okay. Well, while they slipped under your radar, I love all this nautical theming that we've got going on here. You didn't know it, but you've played part of the game. So they slipped under the radar, as you say. Dredge. Have you played it?
By Team 17?
Yes.
Yes. I briefly played it at one of the shows that they showcased it at.
I'm kind of intrigued by it. It's been quite the indie runaway. In fact, one of our co-hosts, Seb, I think at one point in time before he got his greasy mitts on Vampire Survivors, labelled it as sort of like his indie game. He thought it was great. And to be honest, it looks good to me. Nice little sim aspect. I quite like the gameplay loop. This delaying till 2023, does that hurt a game's legs, do you think, Simran, when something like this happens?
Generally, so there's an old famous quote, which is, a rushed game is always bad, and a game that is delayed will inevitably end up good. These type of decisions are not made lightly, especially from a business. Like, no one likes to delay it internally. But generally, if they are delaying something internally to maybe refine it more, make it the best possible experience it can be, yes, there is that initial sadness you won't get your hands on it. But at the end of the day, it costs businesses money to be able to do this. So they don't make decisions like this very lightly. Every single minute that this thing isn't out is actually revenue they're losing with manpower working on it. So to me, I take that as a sign that they actually want to make sure that this experience is ready before they put it out there to consumers. As we've seen from time and time again, when people will just launch a product without thinking of the consumer first. So yeah, I always tell people, yes, delays are never nice, but at the end of the day, you'll get a better quality product out of it, as you hopefully should by the end of it, taking more time to work on it.
I think there might be two factors at play as well. I think Dredge, Team 17 aren't unused to success in some of these small indie games at the back, but Dredge certainly was a pretty out there pitch, I'd imagine. You're a trawler. You work at night, but you catch spooky fish, but then you work in the day to keep your money revenue going in, but fishing at night is dangerous, but fishing in the night, okay, guys, yeah, we've seen the game, it looks crazy. And to be honest, it's been a tearaway success across many formats. Do you think that plays into some of the decisions that people make about delaying a game? Because this is bigger than we thought, and if we don't polish this right up, it could hit and damage the original product.
Absolutely. So at the end of the day, and this goes for game development in general, when you've hit a certain measure of success with a title, you want to make sure that any additions that you add onto that are at the same quality bar or even surpass that quality bar, because a DLC is meant to enhance the further experience, because you're expecting consumers to basically invest in further additions of the product. So the DLC has to at least hit the same bar that the original product hit, or it has to amplify the original experience enough to make consumers want to invest further into the experience. So these sort of decisions, they will have probably looked at the success and gone, right, okay, like, we really don't want this to impact the original product, or we need it to be better than the original product. Similar to The Witcher, like with Blood and Wine expansion. Witcher Blood and Wine expansion is its own game now. They released that on physical copies. And I personally think that's a really great way of handling DLC, where you've made this whole experience that just makes the original product even better. And that's how it should be in game development. This is how a lot of companies like to go this route, because they want to make sure that what consumers are buying makes their product, because their products are a reflection of their brand at the end of the day. So delaying something isn't great because it costs money, but it is the best process to make sure if you can get to the absolute polished state that it can be.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
We will get into your experience shortly, but I must prey on it just a little bit longer. Obviously, with some DLC, you kind of need to hit while the game's still relevant. Now, they're taking an awful risk that by the time we've been through Baldur's Gate, Starfield, Spider-Man, Detective Pikachu, Assassin's Creed Mirage, let's pick some left field choices and throw them in there as well. Once they've all made their impression and taken people's game time away, it's their fear that by the time this DLC hits, people will be saying, what's Dredge?
Yeah, that is always a fear with any game studio when they delay anything. I'd say these decisions are not made lightly, but there are certain things that you can hope to target. So you can hope to target quieter periods, you know, when they're not seeing as many releases. So, and they'll try and wait for a period of a cool down. So in game development terms, generally we break things up into quarters of the year, and generally your earlier quarters of the year to January to April time is generally the area that a lot of indies choose to thrive in because there's not many AAA releases. AAA releases tend to take place later into the year as you go into Q3 and Q4. So you can sort of predict like when a lot of titles will be coming out. They'll have done a lot of research. And this is Team 17. Like, they've got a very good brand, and I know the team at Team 17 quite well. I know a lot of their marketing managers. I know a lot of the brand managers. I know a lot of the marketing leads. They're all very good at what they do. I know that the global communications manager who oversees a lot of the global products that they put out, they do a lot of research to make sure that if they are going to release a product, it has the best opportunity for success. So with a megalodon like Team 17, this thought will have crossed their mind, but they have really good teams working on this.
That last sneaky nautical reference that you stuck in there, the megalodon, makes you an absolute genius in my mind. And with that thought emanating in our mind, could you please do us the great honor of reading this last piece of news?
Of course, because now we have no excuse. The X-Screen attachment for the Xbox Series X has been getting a lot of great feedback over the past few years, and it's become such a big deal that Microsoft has now decided to license it as a part of the Design for Xbox program. This was actually confirmed in a tweet by the USpec Gaming team earlier this week, where they went on to say, we are excited to announce that USpec Gaming is now officially part of the Design for the Xbox program. And the X-Screen for Xbox Series X is our first licensed product. Thank you to everyone at Xbox for their support on this fantastic milestone for us. Being part of the Design for Xbox initiative is definitely worth shouting about. Microsoft says its consumers who buy products containing this label, and I quote, can have the confidence knowing that these accessories have been developed alongside Xbox to deliver the best possible experience. It's a big milestone, without a doubt, for Xbox. However, the device is actually being discounted on Amazon. So instead of the usual $249.99 price point, it's currently $209.99. Apparently, there are plans for a black version of the X-Screen to go to the new carbon black Xbox Series X as well, which sounds absolutely beautiful.
It really does. It is a thing of beauty. And to have this, to put some story to this. Now, I have in the past used, I had a PS1 and a PS2 with a flip up screen, and I had a mate with a GameCube with a flip up screen as well. Now, although I've been, since its launch, RGT, you'd have to agree, a massive proponent of the Switch, one of the greatest gaming machines ever made. But I have struggled along in the past with these screens, but this screen to me is the upper echelon of what you would want from a gaming experience. It's a good price. We're not sponsored by them. Maybe we should be. And that screen is actually clips on there and makes quite a nice device. During your uni days and maybe travel, Simran, have you ever used a portable gaming screen? Or have you been more of a handheld gamer?
Been more of a handheld game personally, like my Nintendo Switch and, you know, back in the day, my PS Vita as well. I do love my Nintendo Switch, though. So I've never really taken portable screens with me because I just like to be able to quickly whip something out on the go handheld.
Okay. I wonder where that was going to go at first, but you brought it back to gaming, so we can all breathe a sigh of relief.
Listen, we'll not bring this back to RGT in his trench coat again.
No, I think it is.
Park pervert.
There's going to be artwork coming up.
RGT, you've always been a bit of a home bird, so one would imagine a bolt-on screen to you seems like a strange indulgence, but is this something that mildly intrigues you, or will it just be part of the collection in 30 years' time when you found one at a car boot?
No, I had the PS2 one.
The Logitech screen?
Yes, the Logitech screen. I had that back in the day.
That TFT, it only had maybe one viewing angle, but probably 1,000 parts of adjustment. So it was quite the screen.
Well, I actually had the, this is going to sound really bad now, I actually had the screen with the car power adapter. So when we used to go on holiday to Cornwall, when my daughter was very young, I would sit in the back and carry on playing my PS2 while Mrs. RGT was driving down to Cornwall. So that was, I had to carry on playing. So yeah, I did have that. So it's always intrigued me, the screens. I knew you'd laugh at that.
What does a gaming addiction look like? He looks like a man who's letting his own child choke on its pacifier while he does that next level. While his wife drives him and hands him pom bears, which are destined for his child, but he's going to eat instead because, do you know what? Gamer's got a game.
Exactly.
Simran, have you ever heard anything as egregious as letting your own child die of starvation while you play games in the back of a probably a Ford Escort?
Galaxy.
Oh, yeah, I'm stitching internally at that. that is a first. That okay. is a
first. Well, we're one for breaking exclusives here at the show, so that's great news. So to anyone who's living that sort of nomadic lifestyle, it doesn't all have to be Switch anymore. It doesn't all have to be on your mobile. You can bolt this bad boy on top of your Series S, and you can game. And you know what? If you've got the white Series S, we got you covered.
I think good thing with this is, I mean, there's always been these screens. You can get them on the PS5. You can get them for a Series X, these third-party ones. But
they're
never,
very expensive briefcase
They're very expensive,
options.
And they're third-party. So you're not quite sure the quality of these screens. You get all these false reviews on them. You're never quite sure. At least this has been spec'd by Xbox. They've tested it. They know it's good. So you've got that seal of approval. Look, you're getting a decent screen and a good price. You know, so I think it's a brilliant thing. It's going to be one in my car soon.
Wow.
Drive away, Mrs. RGT.
Luckily, your child's old enough to feed itself now.
I was just about to say, please make sure there's some food in the car for this child at a bare minimum.
She's nearly 19, so I think she'll cope.
Just feed her the consoles then.
Yeah. Let her sell the gaming collection to provide that food and sustenance she missed out on as a child. With all that said and done, that's the news all wrapped up. Bit of a quiet news week, but still, we have a little dig around on the old 486 and we find something of note for you listeners. Community corrections. Did we miss anything? Do you have an opinion or take on the news we missed? Maybe I called Simran Simon, but that's luckily on the editing suite floor. No one ever knew, but I can't lie, so I better own it. May even leave it in at this point, but I think we won't. If we've made a slip up like that, RGT, how would the collected masses get in contact and say, George, sleep's now important to you.
Mm.
Stop all this gaming malarkey. Get your sleep. Keep the show levels high. How would they get in contact and let us know, A, if we've made a mistake, B, if there was a massive piece of news that we missed this week, or generally remind me that, you know, actually remind you that gaming is a hobby, not a way of life.
That's rubbish, it is. They can get in contact with us at questions@unofficialcontrollerpodcast.com. You can DM us on Instagram or Twitter, or do what all the cool kids do, join the Discord. That's where all the gaming challenges are. That's where my hidden gems are. That's where all the kids hang out. So we talk about everything gaming on there. And I know we're not supposed to talk about Discord, but I have this time. So yeah, join Discord.
The only reason we don't mention the Discord is it's very cool. And if we mention it too much, people think that it's not cool. You know, that's how people's brains work. So if you think you're cool, probably get in the Discord. If you're not, then just stay one of the silent thousands. We're okay with that. We're okay with that. However you want to indulge yourself in the show, you knock yourself out. Now, this is normally the area where we'd pump format, the exclusive VIP gaming event in Manchester that we're attending. Now would also be the time where we would pump the fact that we're going to give away two tickets in some yet-to-be-named exclusive competition available to Discord members. Now would probably be the time where we would pump the fact that you can get your 25% off and join us here. Shake hands with the stars, look at the cosplayers, marvel at the wonder of format that's been arranged. Quite honestly, gamers normally hide in their bedrooms, shivering at the idea of interacting with other gamers, unless it's through a headset and a couple of cans of Monster and probably half a bag of fake Monster Munch that you spat all over the back of your mic and screen. But we're not going to do that, okay? We're going to save all that because we've got something even better this week. We're going to talk about format, but we're going to do it through the medium of our guest, Simran. Thank you for joining us. Obviously, format, lots to talk about there. But before we get to that, let's add some credence as we pick away the layers of your life.
Mm.
Now, bit of a cliche, but to really dig through these next levels, one has to wonder, what was your first introduction to gaming?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
Oh, this is a very difficult one because I'd say my first introduction to gaming, I've been gaming since I was 5 years old. So I remember playing on the...
Parents like RGT, Simran, is that what it was?
Well, my mum was very supportive. Like, you know, she just wanted her children to have the best life possible. So she got me my first gaming console, which was the original Nintendo SNES. Like, we all remember that.
Yes.
Right? Fifth at the top. And GoldenEye 007 was one of the first games that I ever played. So that, you could say that's kind of like where my love and this kind of like came from. It's like the game that inspired me on the path that I chose to go down. But it was kind of my original introduction to gaming.
Okay, so the path you decided to go down led you to Manchester College.
Yeah, it's an interesting journey, man. The journey I went on is definitely not the journey that originally started out on, as is the journey of life in general. You know, so many different turns and twists throughout life. So originally, I wanted to just be a video game designer. I knew from the age of 5 I wanted to make video games, and my mum was very supportive of that. She always pushed me, got me on relevant courses, or researched on my behalf when I was so young to find things that were related. Because game design courses were relatively new then, like they barely existed. Or it was things like concept art courses or animation courses or computer science courses, like actual dedicated video game design courses were very, very new at the time. And very few colleges were offering it as a dedicated course. So I went to Tameside College. I studied art and IT. And then eventually I just felt like those didn't offer what I wanted. And then through my old IT tutor, who I like to give an enormous shout out on everything, because she is the woman, if I had to impact two people who have impacted my life where I am, one is my mum, and one is my old IT tutor, Cheryl, who basically told me I was too good for the Tameside College and said, you do not deserve to be sat in an office doing IT. I'm going to find you a game design course. And she pointed me in the direction of the Manchester College, which is some of the best education I've ever had. This is going to sound like a sponsored post for the Manchester College, by the way.
This is all good stuff, Simran. Please give us some more.
I studied a level 3 BTEC extended diploma in computer games design at the Manchester College, which is in Openshaw, Manchester. If anybody is looking to study game design or get into game design and you're at college level or looking to just leave school, I cannot recommend that college enough. They look after their students so much, and they've got so many more campuses now all over Manchester. So you don't even have to just go to Openshaw now. And there's also UCM, which is also a college/unit that they part own. So you also learn there as well. And for me, it was just kind of, that was my real, how could I describe this? The day I first went to that college, I told I'd got accepted onto the game design course, was like this big, like happy moment in my life. Cause I'd been rejected for every other course that I'd gone for at that point, which was quite devastating. Or I'd just missed the mark, or I didn't have enough grades to get onto those courses. And the Manchester College took a lot of, like, you know, I don't want to say pity, but, you know, they saw the potential in me. They knew how much I wanted to do it. I'm dyscalculia, so I struggle with mathematics like quite a lot. And obviously back then, maths was like a big thing to like get onto a lot of these courses because it was considered quite technical. But the college tutor at the time, called Beth Senior, who is literally like a second mum to me, I literally was watching Oppenheimer with her the other week. Because that's how close I am to my Manchester College tutors. She was basically like, yeah, you're really passionate about this. We're taking you onto the course. And that's kind of what, and I studied everything there. It was like, you did concept art, programming, 3D modeling, environment art, And that is kind of like where my journey into events began, because they saw that how organized I was. I think I was one of only two students that actually managed to get work submitted on time in an orderly fashion, because I'm very time orientated, which might show with my events. Like, I like order, I like routine, I like things to be organized. And basically the Manchester College put me in charge of the end of year shows at 16. I was doing all the college like shows for all the students. And that's kind of where you could say the event organizer began to be born before the game.
Before we, you're a very humble man, because before we slip out of the college, we must say that you were student of the year.
Yes, I suppose you could say that. Yeah, I don't really like to brag about it, but
it tied
into why I was chosen. I got it because I organised all the college end of year shows, because I found the venues. Looking back at it, this was very weird that they asked a 16-year-old to do all this for the college. Like,
a lot of trust, but do you know what? Give you a lot of experience.
Oh, it did give me a lot of experience. And I decided to take it one more level, because I've known from a very young age. My favourite quote of all time, and I live by this, whenever I do talks at colleges or universities, this is the one quote I always ask people to listen to, which is, it's not what you know. A lot of the time it is who you know. The value of networking is so important in life. So I recognized when I was at college, I was like, yeah, an end of year show is great, but it's pointless if it's just students' parents turning up like just to come look at this stuff. So I decided to take it one step further and started reaching out to game studios across to get into college end of year show. And we got, back at the time, Lionhead Studios, the creator of the Fable, to come and be part of the student work. And we got the guys at Team 17 to come along to the college end of year show and just look at some of the student work. And we also found the venues as well at the time. So
that's why
I was awarded student of the year.
Well, quite the accolade, and well-deserved by the sound of it to me, because also you're involved in a EGX BAFTA for best game. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
I actually still have that on my shelf up there, actually.
So, quite rightly so. So we've got BAFTA winners on the show.
I'm going to grab this one second, because it is interesting.
Sim Rand's now reaching on top of the shelf. That's normally where I keep my adult magazines, but this is where he keeps one of his many awards.
So this was for, at the BAFTA Awards, it was for the Young Game Designers Workshop, which is basically EGX. They host like a workshop, like sort of competition for where game design students across the whole country come. They kind of compete against each other. They get put into random teams. I've obviously not done this in a long time, so I don't know how the process has changed since then. But basically, a lot of students got together. You had to come up with a game concept, and you would work with an industry professional, which could be from any studio. I believe the industry professional we got worked at EA at the time, so and he would like guide you as a mentor and stuff like that.
So he built a load of loot boxes and
gotta start them early, boys. You gotta start them early.
Get them hooked in quick. Okay, so tell us a little bit more.
And so we had to come up with a concept for a game, and the game was called, you had, but the objective you had was you had to take the titles of existing products and merge them into the title of your own game. So are you all ready for this? The game was called Hide, but the studio, which had to be a collection of everybody's, a developer of everyone's favorite game there. So, as I mentioned, my favorite game of all time is Dragon Age Origins. And I think you can guess what the other three people who were sat at that table's game was. Our studio was called Metal Gear Age.
That's awesome.
And the game was called Hide, and it was basically a Dragon Age fantasy, so a dark fantasy, but set in a stealthy side future. So, do you ever play Thief, like the original Thief?
Yeah, I was a great fan of the original Thief.
So imagine a third-person stealth game, but set in a dark fantasy universe, somewhat akin to Dragon Age Origins or The Witcher, and your objective was basically to bring down all these corrupt organizations that were basically trying to destroy this fantasy world. Very, very cliche at the time, but basically we had to flesh out all the mechanics and stuff like that, and it was basically what was your USP, what makes your game different to what was on the market, and we basically won, our team won.
Wow, okay. Mm. Well, the accolades didn't stop falling like rain on a May Day, because you also won a 2D horse animation trophy. What's that? Tell me.
Oh, right. Okay.
The details on this.
Yeah. This was a very weird one. So part of our course at Manchester College was animation, 2D animation, because you learn 3D animation as well as 2D animation, because the course wanted to try and give people as many skills in as different areas as possible. And a lot of 2D artists need to learn how animation works from a 2D perspective. So I drew a very unlucky thing out of the hat, which is, I don't know if any of you know much about concept art, but basically one of the most difficult things you can get in concept art is horses, because horses have so many muscles, they have so many moving components, and concept artists in the industry, I know very few of them that like working on horses, because they literally just like, they're like, oh, not again, because so my job was, I had to animate frame by frame a moving horse going through multiple changing environments. And a lot of other people got things like an elf, like firing a bow, like, and there's so many different, I basically got a horse, like with a knight running on a horse, and it was based on Henry, I think his name was Henry Muybridge, who was apparently like this famous horse animator. Basically he conceptualized the idea of 2D animation. He basically sat there with a camera,
yes,
and filmed a horse in sequence. Like, yes. He coined 2D animation, basically, in a nutshell. And feel free to call me out if I'm wrong on this. Like, if someone in the audience...
No, that sounds right. Community corrections, but I don't think anyone's going to be troubling you with that. If it had been what flavour, what's the ingredients to a pot noodle, you'd have been in trouble. In terms of historical animators, I think we're... No disrespect, listeners, but I think we're all good.
Watch there be this one absolute historical animator, and God now is like, he's wrong.
Yeah, well, if they come in with some evidence, they can have a fridge magnet. So this was your college days. Wrapped up within that, you were a Q&A tester, so hands-on at such places as Team 17, 360 Studios and Toxic Games. Now, Q&A testing, forgive me if I'm wrong, but it's the real mucky end of the industry. It's playing that level over and over again with ever depreciating amounts of coins in your pocket, doing things that you probably wouldn't expect a gamer to do in the hope of breaking the game. Now, we know a little bit now, but maybe you at the time didn't know anything about this, and did you go into that blind thinking, look out, guys, chest out, swag around the campus, giving it the whole look at me playing all the latest games? And then did you feel like that, or did you go in knowing exactly what Q&A testing was going to be, which is a bloody tough slog, Simran?
I knew quite early on. I say my game design course at college, so my first ever QA session, they started me early. I started it at 16, so that's how early I got into it. And basically that was at 360 Studios. So what they did is the college did work placements, and they got me a work placement at 360 Studios for about a month or two. Yeah. I was 16 at the time, so my memory is foggy. I'm showing my age here a little bit. And basically what that was on, and I believe they released the product in the end. It was like a WWE mobile game, so it was a wrestling mobile game, and we had to go into it. And we came in very early into the project, like to the point where I would actually say QA wasn't needed at that point. Like, they needed to develop it a little bit more, because the project was quite buggy when we came into it. But that was my first experience, and I knew straight walking into it, because my tutors at my college were really good. Like, they were very upfront with the students, like, this is what QA is, which is an integral part of game development. I have huge respect for QA testers, because they have one of the most difficult jobs, which is to sit there and break a game and find so many ways to break it. And it's a near impossible job, because something will always slip through the cracks, because you fix one thing in one place and then it breaks about 90 things in another location, which is why game design is so hard. And I learned that very early on with this WWE mobile game, which was getting really into the nitty-gritty of that. And the other QA kind of jobs fell into when I started my first year at uni.
Okay, so coming out of the Q&A testing, you end up as the head of marketing, or founder and head of marketing for TriHeart International. What's that all about? It's a couple of games still available on Steam, should you want to get a little bit of taste of Simran's work, available for you still to get your greasy mitts on. What's the story there?
Yeah, so after college, I went to Futureworks, the School of Education in Manchester, which studied game design there. And in my I was actually in my second year at the time, going to third year, but some third year students are who we'd become friends with had basically decided to found our own game studio. Crazy. I don't know if you know Manchester well, but we founded it at Crazy Pedro's in Deansgate whilst eating a chicken and waffle pizza. That part is very important, eating a chicken and waffle pizza with syrup on top.
Listen, Simran, the way your career's progressing, there'll be a blue plaque above that place with your name on it at this rate. Tell us some more details about that then. Why a waffle?
Yeah, basically one of my fellow founders was just like, you need to try the chicken and waffle pizza at Crazy So, and then I basically, the idea for a video game came out, so we decided to call ourselves Tryheart Interactive because I'm a firm believer in too many game studios have the word game studios, like in that, and we didn't want to just limit ourselves to games. We wanted to be a media company as well. So I wanted to play like games out of the title, which is why we call ourselves Tryheart Interactive, because we wanted the element of like a bit of tech in there.
Yeah.
And we also wanted heart and emotion in what we do. So we had those Tryheart, and then Interactive just allowed us to break into other forms of medium. So the concept for the actual studio was formed over the chicken and waffle pizza. And then two of the guys I founded the studio with, who may or may not have been high at the time, I will not disclose this, basically pitched an idea to us, which was one thing we'd always felt like we were all Nintendo fans, like we were all huge Nintendo fans, and we all love Splatoon. But one thing we thought Splatoon was always lacking in was split screen, which was Splatoon is just one of those games that I think complemented split screen ridiculously well at the time.
Completely, yeah.
And it just wasn't available. And we basically said, should we make the first ever, I am proud of this and I will own this. We made the first ever online multiplayer split screen shooter for Nintendo Switch. And it was called The Ottoman Empire. And The Ottoman Empire was where a third person online split screen local multiplayer screen shooter where you played as otters in space with jetpacks in highly stylized arenas where you basically fought each other for victory. Lots of character customization, which was great. And it was basically Splatoon with otters in jetpacks.
Now that sounds very exciting. There's going to be a lot of historical fans here that thought they were going to play as the 17th, 20th century Turkish Empire, but it transpires it's otters in space.
Yeah.
One would imagine that the medication hadn't quite sort of worked off even after the chicken waffle pizza. Otters in space in a Splatoon clone is incredibly brave, but that USP of split screen couch co-op did it some legs.
Yeah, it was a massively, and don't forget, we'd never launched a game before. Like, we were a bunch of students at the time before we became a full-fledged studio, and we worked on a wide variety of different products at that time. We did a very ambitious first title. Like, this is something I always tell a lot of students as well, like, please make your game, like, small in scope, your first ever product, because we don't do what we did, which was a three-year slog, because we were learning along the way as well. So we were like, we thought this thing was going to be a lot easier than it actually was. And then we got into it. It's like, oh, there's a reason they've never done this before. Like, oh, yes. And then we basically did the impossible, which was we made this beautiful, and I'm very proud of it. The Ottoman Empire is one of my most proudest achievements, which is we made this beautifully stylized, good-looking game for Nintendo Switch, PC, and Xbox, which was basically Splatoon in space with online multiplayer, split screen for the people who wanted to capture that old golden era of sitting with your friends. Because that we remembered those good old days. We wanted the option to like sit there with your friends and have split screen. But then we also wanted online multiplayer in there as well for people who couldn't play with their friends. Because
of course,
we launched this during lockdown as well. But to bring it back to that, basically, so the Ottoman Empire was kind of our main IP that we were known for. It was a really good game that we were super proud of. We also worked on Terrorworm, which was a collaboration project with a Manchester indie studio called Prospect Games at the time, which was that was kind of like our first shit title whilst we were making the Ottoman Empire, because we wanted to learn the process of what it was like to actually launch a game. So I said earlier before, we decided to like actually focus, and it was a collaboration project between the two studios, which you get all the time in the industry. So Terrorworm came out, and then we also did a lot of client work for various companies. One of them, which we can talk about, was Vista Venus, which is a lot of news has just come out now, which is an open world mobile game that's coming out. that's based around pop culture music, which is currently being developed at the moment by the guys at Vista Vina Limited, so who worked on that. But then the Ottoman Empire launched during the good old days of lockdown, which, you know, during that time to launch an online multiplayer split-screen shooter turned out quite handy, and that launched on Nintendo Switch, Xbox, and Switch in July 2020. So it gave me a lot to do during lockdown, let's put it that way.
Wow, you know, very exciting stuff, and certainly, as I say, another laminate layer on the way as we build up to format. Now, after that, head of player engagement at Milky Tea Studios, well, what's that sort of role involve, and how's that form part of your journey to where we are today?
Yeah, so, and just to like add some context to this, was format actually like is 7 years old, and I was doing these events alongside all of these jobs as well. So like, wow. Format wasn't something that was birthed after these jobs. Like, it was existing like its own journey separate to all this, which I'll touch upon. Player engagement is basically, in a nutshell, it was a fancy title for head of marketing, but it also encompassed a lot of like what basically kept player retention as well. So I was in charge of coming up with marketing tactics that could be used to make people want to carry on playing the games, what we could implement from like a player reward perspective, and just new initiatives that kept people wanting to play and engage with titles, basically. So it was head of marketing and engagement as well, all rolled into one. So I dealt with a lot of the content creation, a lot of the trailers. I worked very closely with the art team to produce new assets, such as like, you know, cutscenes for the trailers, new concept art, like competitions that could be used like for all the marketing assets. Basically, I was the overall head of marketing for the like the company on Hyper Brawl Tournament, which are Milky Tea, a fantastic company. I'm still very close to the team over there. I love the guys over there, like, you know, great passionate bunch who are working on some great projects at the moment. And the title I was most known there for was Hyper Brawl Tournament, which came out on absolutely everything, every single platform, including Apple Arcade, which was also a pleasure because that was my first time getting to work on an Apple Arcade product. And for those of you who don't know, Apple Arcade is Apple's arcade where a lot of game studios can launch their games onto, fantastic platform. So yeah, that's basically what I did with those guys for a long time, overseeing a lot of the marketing and engagement operations for that particular product.
Okay, so as you say, in the background of all this, of your day job, but in the background, you've got Format rumbling along, slowly building its journey to where it is today. Mm. I think, obviously, influencing manager for the game production company, marketing executive for XR Games. Is that still ongoing, or have you switched? What's going on now in your life? Bring us up to speed with where you are today.
Yeah, so where I'm at today, basically, it was a long years, few years journey with Format building up alongside. So it wasn't always called Format. It was called Manchester Gamers Unite. But what I've done over the years is, after working in so many various game studios across all platforms, including VR games as well and movie licensed titles, which has been an absolute privilege, I made the jump a long while back that I wanted to transform Format not into just an events company, but also a media company. Mm. Where we could basically help, because our team, which I'm very privileged to work alongside, it comes from so many different backgrounds. You come from myself, who comes from a content creation, marketing, project management, production, event organizer background. We've got video editors. Our head of branding is the former like head of branding at Nike, who is absolutely incredible at what he does. We've got content creators in the team who come from a community management and social media background. And what we decided the route we wanted to go was work with potential industry and entertainment clients to provide those services to them, like what we're doing now with the likes of Rezzel in Manchester. We work with those guys on their VR projects at the moment, and a few other clients that I can't talk about at this moment during time, but we'll be talking about in the future.
Is that your big budget 24p? UCP clients, you're gonna take us to the top for a UCP fridge magnet. You're a very kind man. So I think we've arrived at the point where we can really get the spade out and dig deep on not only this, we're in October now, so this month's upcoming format, but also format in general. Just to the uninitiated, let's say someone stumbled across this episode, they're this far in, their interest is piqued, the heckle's up. Like, what is this format? Who is this sexy Simran guy telling me about all this sort of salubrious nightlife activity that's going on in Manchester, a pretty cool city, if I may say myself. But you are right there in the center of it, giving people this touchstone of the games industry. Do you want to just run us through how you put one of these things together, and then ultimately what people would have to look forward to at a general format event before we get to the to this month's exciting event?
Yeah, so I'll briefly talk about like what the concept was to begin with, and then I'll go jump into the nitty-gritty of what it actually consists of, because it's a huge, like, it format is a huge moving beast that a lot of people don't understand the moving components, which they shouldn't, because a successful event is able to put people into its immersiveness without them having to notice all the nitty-gritty.
Format, Wizard of Oz style.
Yeah. Format basically started off, and I'm very open and honest, but there's not many interviews with me about this. It basically started out of boredom originally. So during my first year at university, I'd just finished my first year at Futureworks School of Limited Learning, basically game design. And I'd noticed at the time in Manchester that there was just no game meetups, like, period. Like, there was nothing happening, which for the big, one of the best cities in like the country, I was like, how is there no games industry events?
That is odd, isn't it? Considering the history of the college and some of the stuff that's set up in and around that area of the world.
Yeah, and Manchester's one of the best. Like, I love Manchester. I'm a Mancunian, but I think it's the greatest city ever. But Manchester's such a creative city. Like, it's so, like, I've never seen such a city where you can walk into one hand, you're in the rich part of the city, but then you go to, like, the punk IPA, like, part of the city where you've got graffiti everywhere, the urban street kids. Then you've got kind of, like, your hipster section of the city all within walking distance of each other. It's such a vibrant, diverse, and creative city. So for me, I was like, why is there no gaming meetups? Like, at all in this city. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So throughout my first year at uni, I basically got bored. I threw 50 quid on Facebook ads. I basically threw something together with a friend at the time, which was a co-host of the event, just as like a kind of few like little one-offs. And we called it Manchester Gamers Unite because it was very on the boy. I had no intention of becoming what it is today. And basically, we threw 50 quid on Facebook ads, hired a space in Manchester's Northern Quarter. It used to be called Dive Bar, but it's now become an extension of NQ64.
Yeah.
Yeah, so NQ64 have just took over this massive bar, which is actually where we started, which I find very ironic that the heritage there ended up becoming a massive gaming bar. So, but kind of interesting turn of events there.
And to those not initiated, that's literally, this is very embryonic, this street almost, because over the road is where Format will be this year, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, that is, yeah, like, it is very, very interesting. And basically, from there, 100 people turned up to our first ever night from 50 Facebook ads. And the manager at the venue at the time was like, would you like to do another event? You know, you can do more events, right? You know, you can do more events, translation. we wanted more money for the bar. So I looked at my co-host at the time, like, should we do another one of these? Like, and we went, go on then. So we did another one next month, 50 quid on Facebook ads again. 150 people turned up to it.
Wow.
So the third event, we did a third one. And this is all just during the summer of like my first year. This is between the gap between the end of my first year to the beginning of my second year at university. We did a third event, 200 people turned up. And at this third event, local indie developers started approaching us, saying, hey, we've heard about this event. Can we come showcase our games off? So we had three developers at this event, and I still, we brought like a bunch of old consoles in, and like, you know, retro consoles like PS4s, and just put like a wide array of games. And then there was a handful of indie devs showcasing this thing. And I said to my co-host at the time, I was like, I want to do more of these. I'm going to host one every single month throughout the summer just to create that like event that I feel like it's been lacking. And I'll just, it was a hobby at the time. Like, it was just like, I'll do this for as long as I can alongside my coursework and my jobs at the same time. So it was just hosting these, and they were just getting bigger and bigger every single time. So eventually we developed this reputation of being this underground, dingy sort of like nightlife experience, because there was DJs playing and there was video games. We were the original NQ64 before they came along in Manchester. So that's basically how we grew from there. And then after that, it just continued to get bigger. We had the likes of Ubisoft and Sony wanting to showcase at this underground nightlife.
How did that feel at that moment? Was that a moment of like, you know, we've made it, or did that add more pressure to you to deliver at that moment?
A hybrid of both. So for me, it was incredibly humbling that these two giants wanted to showcase what at the time was a 300-400 people event in this little bar in Manchester. And then there was also the pressure that was like, there's nothing like this. So I'm a huge nightlife lover. So in my second year at university, that side of me really came out. Like, I love events like the Warehouse Project, the Hacienda, the nightlife era, because for me, and this is in particular, that doesn't exist in the games industry other than us. No. We are, I call us the UK's games industry nightlife event, but we're actually the world's UK games, like there's no other games industry nightlife events in the whole of the world. And for me, I remember walking into the Warehouse project. I will bring this back to your original question, I swear.
It's okay. No, I'm loving the journey, please.
Yeah. And I walked into the Warehouse project at university, and I remember just seeing like the big stages, the production, the massive DJs and the talent on stage. And I walked in and went, why does this not exist for video games? Like, why has no one talked the most adaptable medium on the planet, the greatest medium on the planet? It's better than music. It's better than film because it transports you. With music and film, you're a consumer. You view it. You hear it. With video games, you're in control. And to me, I was like, the two complement each other so well, but they've just got such opposing communities. I took the most introverted people on the planet and threw them into the most extroverted function that you can possibly think of. But thing is, human beings are tribal animals. You can be the most introverted geek nerd on the planet, and you still want to be with other people that have similar hobbies to you. So it was basically just taking some elements of that nightlife culture and blending it into video game culture. And like a nightlife event, which has good cocktails, I created this beautiful cocktail, which was takes all the great elements of a traditional expo, because I'm not a fan of expos, if I'm honest with you. I think they're very anti-consumer in nature, which for me, they're about selling you products. I'm not about that. I think an event is designed to sell you an experience, not a product. And a lot of that has been lost as we've become more capitalistic in the industry. And for me, I really wanted to restore that grassroots gaming and put fun back in games industry events, which I think has sadly been lost along the way in a lot of these events that you go to.
I think you might actually be UCP's first Saint Simran. I've given away a lot of titles, but this objective that you're fulfilling here, uniting gamers, bringing them down, giving them that experience. Not, I said on the way into this section where we're talking to you about your life and the industry and format, but you know, gamers, as you say, are predominantly introverts. They like to hide behind the screen, and they don't like to get too involved unless it's over a mic. So you've achieved what I would call a miracle. You brought them down to a space, fed them booze, and got them talking to each other and possibly even interacting with each other, which is a scary thought.
The thing, it's been a very long journey, and, you know, we've perfected the process as we've got along. I remember the first ever event, this guy came up to me, he was like, I never leave my house, like, I never come out. And he was like, I've really enjoyed this, thank you. Like, it's
wow.
Just to connect with people. And for me, that's what really, but the actual moment that really did it for me, which was uniting game developers, creatives, content creators, and the gamers together. One, and I'll tell you the exact moment that really inspired my journey was in the games industry, because I come from a unique perspective. I've come from a consumer standpoint, and I work in a game development standpoint as well. So I have the unique perspective. I understand frustrations from the gaming community at developers, but then I also understand that gamers don't understand game development, don't have a go at developers, because you do not understand the stress these people are under 24/7 to produce the things that you like to play. And the thing for me was, at the time, we actually had a load of the guys from Cloud Imperium who work on Star Citizen, Squadron 42, at one of our early events. I think it was like the third event that made me really want to do it. And a bunch of gamers went up to a bunch of the environment artists at Cloud Imperium and were like, why is your game not out yet? I've backed your game. Like, they were like, it wasn't aggressive, but they were being quite rude to them.
Passionate.
And I was sat at the bar at the time, and I was ready to get involved and be like, right, guys, can you, like, but then the environment artist sat down with them and was like, hey, like, it's okay. I understand that you're frustrated. You're like, you know, from our perspective, we want to finish this thing as well. Like, we want to get it ready for you. And they just sat down. And I was watching at the bar at the time just to see whether or not this thing might escalate a little bit. But they sat down at the table and they had a conversation. And I remember that the gamer actually apologized to the environment artist and basically said, like, I'm really sorry if I came across as rude. I'm just very passionate about, like, the Star Citizen franchise. Like, I want it to be the best it can be. And they just shook hands and hugged out. And I went, that there is the issue. Communication. Mm. You have this horrible trend in the industry where gamers think they know everything. Mm. And then you have developers who don't communicate. They sit in this little echo chamber developing their games, and they don't communicate to their audiences. And I've carried this forward into the game studios I've worked at as well, which is communication is key. And I said, that is my goal right there, to get all the gamers, all the developers, all the content creators in one space, on equal footing, which you can't do at a traditional expo because there's a formal barrier between them.
You go up
for about an hour, play a game, they slap headphones on you, you don't engage with the developer or the creative, you play 15 minutes, you shoot on, and there isn't any of that. At format, there is none of that.
When you go to one of these events, quite often, if I may, you get maybe like an events person that's maybe not intrinsically involved with the studio. They're the people that stick the headphones on you. They're the people that push you in front of the game. They don't really know that much about it, apart from a 5 or 10 minute brief at the start of the event. They kind of regurgitate that to you. You're trying to play these games and take some sort of meaningful thing away from it, but you can't actually speak to the people that created the game. Now, that's either through design or through commitments, through time or development windows or whatever it is that they're doing. But you are normally exposed to someone who really doesn't even know what this game is. They're just taking a check and a T-shirt.
Yeah, we found this out in London, didn't we? It was like that
at Truman Brewery. So, yeah. You know, this event to me is almost like manna from heaven, if I may be so bold. So are you bringing the developers down to this event every single time?
Yep. So it's always the creatives behind the game. So you are speaking to people that either work directly with the developers or the direct developers themselves. These are not some studio hands that have been hired from an external agency to come in and represent the game. For example, and this is just to show how far our reach has come, we have 5 game studios flying over from India to exhibit at this event. The event has grown to the point now where we have people from Belgium, France, America, Norway travel over just to participate in 2 and sometimes 3 of the nights that format is. Because that, for me, what I'm very passionate about is gaming culture. And for me, the reason why I don't go to a lot of these big events is that outside of the networking opportunities for me to network with potential exhibitors and potential content creators for the event and stuff like that, a lot of them have forgotten the grassroots community aspect that they were founded to bring, which is a space for everyone to come and enjoy the magic of video games. Because as I said earlier, video games are the best medium on the planet. And for me, I found that no one had ever mixed nightlife successfully with video games. Like, you should be able to go to a festival and have all your headliners, i.e. like you would go to something like Glastonbury, they'll have different headliners on stage. For me, my developers are my headliners.
Yes.
But then we have music performances. So I'll give you a sneak peek of an announcement that's coming for that. And this is how much we...
Another one.
Yeah.
It's a trifecta of exclusives, Siren. You're being very generous to us.
I am. It's coming out next week, so it's fine. I can do it. And basically, I take all the best elements of a festival and a nightlife event and put it into gaming, and the two complement each other very well because no one has done it before. But once you get a few drinks down, people, and you don't even have to drink to enjoy format. I have people who don't drink alcohol and they still like the community aspect of it because it's very tight knit. You'll learn this, like, it's not big empty halls, like, you're not separated. It's very tight knit. You're forced to be social with people. And you know, and if you're not a social person, there are like the beer gardens or there's quiet spaces that you can go to get a bit of a reprieve if you just need, if you find it a little bit too much. Because I'm very open and honest about this, format is a nightlife event. And that may be not everyone's cup of tea, but it is put in the grassroots. And we have some of the biggest brands in the world that want to showcase at this thing. We've had Sony, Ubisoft, we've got Playtonic at the next event. And just to, and this is the announcement that I'll tell you, is now the exclusive, but to tell you who one of our headliners is, we have the legendary music composer, David Wise. I don't know if any of you know who he is. He's going to be performing live on stage in his band, the David Wise Five, where they perform some of their iconic game soundtracks. So the Donkey Kong Racing soundtrack, Diddy Kong, Ukulele soundtrack, Mario soundtrack, and they'll perform these live on stage in front of our audiences. People love what we build. And that's just one of the music tacks that I have for this next event that's performing for you.
I'm slathering like a starving dog at this news.
We've got Master Chiefs and LED lights that dance on stage for you. But then in front of that, you've got Playtonic just showcasing like their games off, like whilst all this stuff is happening on stage. Like, it's a galore of like just stuff happening. People have told me they've turned up like, what do I do? Like, there's just too much doing. That's what gaming is. It's fun ultimately. I'm not there to sell you products. Like, we have a few little things like fashion pop-up shops, but again, for me as an event organizer, I'm not selling these products. It's not like there's endless stalls of tat trying to sell you something. For me, the guys who are showcasing their fashion pop-up shop are doing character creation like shirts. So what they do is they've weaved it into the event, which started a printing press, and they'll go, right, what character do you want on a shirt? And they'll customize your character onto your shirt. And that ties into the overall theme. We have like Rafe Energy, who we've launched energy drinks with before, like having gaming themed energy drinks there. A lot of it's free for people to try. You don't have to buy it. You can just try the energy drinks. Because for me, it's about the experience ultimately. And we've grown now to the point where we do this more or less full time with our contract work that we do as a studio as well. I've been able to grow to that point where I'm very proud of it. We do two massive events a year, and the events take place over 3 evenings. So I say we work with massive game studios who like to get involved. So we have like a VIP industry night, which is for our exhibitors, sponsors, partners to come together. And it's very industry focused, a lot of keynote presentations and panels, business networking. Then we have the main marquee event, which, you know, I'm bringing this back to the original question that you asked, because I'm trying to like weave all this back together because I can talk about this stuff for hours.
Yeah.
So we have the main marquee event, which is Format, the Ultimate Gaming Social, which is the UK's biggest games and nightlife event, which is basically a rave for nerds, effectively. And then we have our latest announcement, which is something we've been working towards now, which I'm very happy to have done, which is our after party, which has become a permanent addition of what we've done now, the after party, which is more chill vibes. Like, you know, it's not like busier, like the main event. Like, you know, if you're a creator or you're a dev or you're just a gamer, you want to come somewhere and chill, relax, have a drink in a more controlled environment, then yeah, that's that. Not that I'm saying we don't control the environment of the main event. Like, we control that one quite a lot as well. But that is what Format is, basically, in a nutshell. It is 3 evenings, one of a B2B networking event for the industry, the main event, which is basically an expo meets a rave, and then your after party the day after. And that is when we saw all the exhibitors, all the partners, sponsors, performers at the event, all the equipment that's there. It is a large undertaking that what we do every single time. We do 2 of these a year.
I was actually explaining to someone the other day, and I was explaining what Format was, and they went, wow, I've never heard of anything like that. And I said, you won't. This is the one. This is where you go. And they said, that sounds awesome. Why has no one done it before? And I said, well, you need to be there then to experience it, because it is the event.
I can tell you why no one's done it. It's because it's very hard work. Like,
I can imagine, yeah.
We took the most difficult undertaking, which was making introverts want to come to an extroverted event. And there's so many moving components to it as well. Like, I could easily throw a club night on with just performers. Like, that would be so easy. But we've got your exhibitors. Like, and I say we've got Playtonic, Capcom have sent us Street Fighter 6 to come down and play. We've had Ubisoft in the past, EA, Sony, all under one roof. Like, these things take time. Like, you're talking about months of email exchanges just to get people to come to an event. So you're sorting exhibitors out. We've got the Content Creator Lounge on the third floor, where creators can live stream at the event as well if they get accepted into that, which is run by our partners at Quota. You've got the VIP industry night the night before, which is a whole thing in itself, what you've got to organize. So basically, it's 72 hours of back-to-back events for our team. And it is a huge, and that's just the main event. That's not even taking the 2 other events that go alongside this. The main event itself is an expo and a rave that takes place all in one evening. Like, it's a huge undertaking. We've got like arcade club with arcade cabinets. You've got your content creators and all the logistics that go into that, your outreach, your marketing activities, your exhibitors finding right games. And this is an added pressure I put onto myself as well, as I don't like too much repetition at the event. So I like to try and get different games in every single time so the events don't become stale. That becomes a challenging because there's always so many limited amount of games that you can potentially source. And then a lot of these people have to travel in, or there's new initiatives. Like I said, the Indian developers who are coming all the way from Mumbai, Punjab.
That's crazy.
But we've grown to the point now where all these game studios want to be involved. Playtonic approached us, actually, not the other way around. They were like, we love this. Like, we want to come showcase at it. And that's very humbling for me. It's a long journey, and it's a lot of hard work. I know people that have tried to do something similar, and they've just caved because they've just said that this is too much, like, to do for like a small team. And that's why we've perfected the formula, because it is a lot of hard work. And that's why you won't find anything else like Format, because building that beautiful hybrid of nightlife and an expo and gaming culture to a tasteful way that's done so it's not so capitalistic and anti-consumer, it's a very difficult line to walk. And you have to have someone who understands the nightlife world and also the gaming world at the same time. Because if you take, I've seen game developers and gamers try and hold nightlife events, and I'm just like, you can't do it because you don't understand what makes a nightlife event so special, which is the experience. And you need to find someone who encapsulates all that quite well.
I would like to put forward someone who would encapsulate that quite well would be RGT stripped to the waist, fired up on Wraith energy. getting to sample some of the latest games. I hope we've given you the time that you deserve. And I think you, one more thing that we need to give you is that 30-second pop and sizzle reel. Like I said at the start, we're going to be there. There's an absolute wealth of other content creators that are going to be there. You've got all the titles of all the other studios. We're going to be giving away a couple of tickets. So we're going to obtain a couple of tickets to give those away. We've also got, for the whole of the listenership, 25% discount on tickets. Very generous offer. So, you know, excited to see them there. We don't want any excuses either, listeners, because this will be your first time to maybe have a little bit of the secret sauce with your hosts. There was rumor of us bringing over the Americans. I don't know if that's still happening, but it'd be nice to get them here. Nice to see them in person as well. It's not often we get out. We're gamers. Okay. Simran, so this is your one pitch. Someone sat there. They've got us on Spotify. They're probably playing another round of Warzone. They're probably another two sips of Monster Energy away from having some sort of heart spasm because they're on about their eighth can. What are you going to tell them to get them out of their bedroom, in a hotel, in Manchester, fired up on Wraith Energy, and goodness knows what else? What's the elevator pitch for them?
Format is the UK's biggest games industry nightlife, and we specialise in uniting gamers, game developers, game makers, and content creators in a non-capitalistic manner, which returns to grassroots gaming. If you want an event where you can connect with people like you and enjoy the latest games and the latest talent that the industry has to offer, all whilst in a very friendly, social, loving environment, which has been lost along the way in a lot of traditional events, this is an event for you. You do not have to like nightlife culture. You do not have to like drinking. If you just want to meet fellow gamers, live stream, or play video games, or just come together for the reason why we all love this, video game culture, this is an event for you.
I love it. Now, with all that said and done, and thank you so much for coming on. There's only one member of the team you've yet to meet, that's Stingray. Now, I know he's probably the reason why you wanted to be here. I'm excited to see how you see him, because we see him differently every week. Simran, again, thank you. But now it's time for a peek in what we affectionately call Stingray's Boot, what's nestled between some counterfeit naps and the dodgy copy of Battlefront all this week. These are the new release highlights for the week, October 1st to October 8th, 2023. Listeners, these are out in digital, physical, or will be by the time this podcast is in your feed, but could be region-dependent. Spring, stop, rattle, roll. He's jumped out of the car. I'll tell you, I see him. He's trying to set up in our local village of Farmerton at the Methodist Village Hall what he calls format. Now, I can't. You've got to be careful with Ray, because he sells counterfeit goods. We know this. Now, he's trying to get some people down to his show in Farmerton Village. I'm a little bit nervous. He's got a load of fake energy drinks, and he's got a load of Nokia 3310s out there with Snake on. I don't think this is going to be a success, so I think you're going to be safe with format, Simran. But Wayne Ray, although he's a small chap, he's dressed up as the head of security. He's got a Britney mic on, a dark jacket, and some black jeans. But he couldn't find his plimsolls. So he's just wearing barefoot, to be honest with you. I don't know whether that's because that's how he practices his kung fu or whether he's actually dangerous. Now, I don't know where to go to with this. I don't know whether we want to find out what Simran's seeing or whether we want to find out what RGT... I think Simran, curiosity got the better of me. He killed the cat. But how are you... This is your first time here. It's your first time seeing the Ray. How are you witnessing the Ray?
I see Stingray, right, as this sort of aquatic stingray lookalike. So imagine if a stingray evolved over the centuries and became more humanoid. So he doesn't look like one, but he's got very similar traits, very rubbery skin. Like, you know, it's led to a lot of jokes made at his expense at innuendo. But I picture him as a humanoid, but he's the only one of his kind, and he's stuck in human civilization. He's very humble, like Keanu Reeves. He rides the subway to work every single day.
Wow.
But he wears this long black trench coat, similar to RGT, in fact.
This is going to stick.
And he has a beautiful plain black suit underneath with some loafers, which he keeps very, very polished every single day.
Wow.
An umbrella with him everywhere he goes, even if it's not raining. Don't ask me why. He always carries an umbrella. But he has an adopted son who he's took as his responsibility, because like himself, he's the only one of his kind, and he felt lost and humbled at his journey, and he wanted to be able to have someone, not only for his own company, but to give someone. So he has a small adopted Bulgarian son who comes. But he is based in a very remote village in Yorkshire called the Happy Valley. Okay, to anyone who doesn't know what the Happy Valley is in Yorkshire, he's based there, and he's got a very broad Yorkshire stingray accent. Don't ask me what that sounds like. He just likes to go, "Oh, I'm from Yorkshire." Yorkshire. And every single day he goes to the chemist where he works in his suit. He sits there and he categorizes all of the medication. And that is the life of Stingray. He works in a chemist in a small in Yorkshire with his adopted Bulgarian son, living a very quiet, content life in Yorkshire.
I think that's the best stingray we've ever had.
I thought that Mike Rouse saying that he saw his sting as was the upper body of his grandfather, but the lower half of a mermaid. This has topped it. The adoption of the Bulgarian son while living in Happy Valley, serving quite studiously in a pharmacy, is next level. I shudder to think how you're seeing him this week.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to follow that up. funnily enough, I think for me as well, Ray's obviously trying to get on the format theme. So he's come dressed as a DJ.
Oh.
Unfortunately, he's dressed more like Ravon off Phoenix Nights. So he's not quite with the in crowd. He keeps saying, "Shabba!" He keeps saying also, "Do you want to go faster?" So I don't think he's quite grasped what the DJ is, but he's got his mullet. He's got his fake leather 80s jacket on. He's got his cowboy boots and some nice stonewashed denim. But then Wayne has come along almost like he's dressed in a party outfit, but it looks like an Xbox flip screen. But it's a very, very cheap knockoff version. And when you flip the screen up, you just got Wayne's little chubby face on looking out at you. Yeah. So
okay. I thought you were going to say it flips up and it's one of those water games, you know, from Tomy or from one of the mega deal meals or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely wonderful. Okay. With all that said and done, Sting doesn't like to be kept waiting. Wayne, he's been here for the long wait for a long time, but Sting doesn't like to be kept waiting. So I'm going to pull out Assassin's Creed Mirage. It's for the PC, PS5, Xbox Series X, PS4, and Xbox One, coming out October 5th. In Assassin's Creed Mirage, you are Basim, a cunning street thief with a nightmarish vision, seeking answers and justice. Join an ancient organization and come to understand a new creed, one that will change Basim's fate in ways he never could have imagined. RGT, what's your pick out?
I knew I'd get this one. Why did you put this second on purpose, didn't you? My pick out is Bang on Balls Chronicles, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, October 5th. A quirky, absolutely content-packed, destructible open-world sandbox adventure with combat, platform, and character customization and collect-a-thon scavenger hunt experience. Wow, that is a description and a half. Play solo, two-player split screen, or online co-op for up to four players. No paid cosmetic DLC nonsense.
Okay, Simran. You peek into the boot of this rather strange-looking character. What's your game you're picking out?
Ooh, so, for me personally, and it's just because, you know what, the franchise has burnt me more than once, but you know what, I'm sticking with it at this stage. It is Assassin's Creed Mirage, because okay. For me, I've been with Assassin's Creed that long. Assassin's Creed Brotherhood is actually in my top five favourite games of all time. I've played every installment of the franchise. Some I've enjoyed, some I've not enjoyed, and some I've really not enjoyed. But at this stage, you know what? I'm with it to the end. And I'm hoping, from what I've seen, Mirage does go back a little bit to what made some of the original series so great for me, even if it just goes in the style of Origins a little bit. That really captures that Middle Eastern vibe and reinstalls a little bit of the traditional stealth element. So, yeah, it has to be the Assassin's Creed Mirage for me, just because I'm too far in deep at this stage.
Wow, okay. Well, I'm still recalling from playing all of the Assassin's Creed games back-to-back not that long ago, and I had some good times, but I had some not very good times. But all in all, it was a good experience. Okay, so that's your mummy. I think my mummy we're going to get to, but next out the boot, Bloodline PC October 5th, an open freeform adventure RPG that lets you play your way, reforge bonds between kingdoms, explore the wilds, craft and plan adventures, and wield mighty weapons or magic as you prepare for what is to come. While I'm here, let's have a look at this. It's Folk Hero on the PC. It's an action slasher with roguelike elements set in the world of a Slavic fantasy. Were you ever involved in writing some of these blurbs, Simran? Because they are next level at times.
To be fair, I can tell exactly how many iterations the marketing guy has put through this to, like, you know, he's defo had sign off on all these. So, you know what? Fair play to some of these descriptions.
These are some of the funnest parts of the show. RGT, tell me about Hidden Through Time.
Hidden Through Time 2, Myths and Magic, PC, October 5th. Join Clicky on a new enhanced adventure in Hidden Through Time 2, Myths and Magic. Search for hidden objects scattered around hand-drawn worlds and unlock more as you go. With both single-player campaign and an online mode where you can create your own dream world, the adventure never ends.
I tell you one thing. I used to frown at eating and drinking on air. I've now just had a piece of cheese on toast, and it's reminded me why. Because I can't speak now, scratch my throat out, and I feel like I've ate Gandhi's flip-flop. Knights versus Giant, the Broken Excalibur, PC, PS5, Xbox Series X, must say, okay? Great game to take on the go. It's on the Switch, October 5th. Step into the grooves of King Arthur in this fantasy action roguelike, wield the Broken Excalibur in a quest to rescue the scattered citizens of Camelot, vanquish all the calamities of Ward Giant, and escape from...
Interesting title.
They had a chicken waffle. And escape from the astral dimension once and for all. Simran, do you want one, or are you happy to just watch Ray perform his magic?
Do you know what? Well, I've already played this game because this game is coming to format on October
20th. Yes!
Perfect!
Developed by the games at P-Cube, so you can put that description to the test on October 26th.
What's that? Knights versus Giant is what you've played?
That's by P-Cube.
Okay, right. Well, we'll see if it does match up to the Astral Dimension once and for all. Stop Dead on PC, October 5th. A rogue AI is hell-bent on destroying its creators and swept up in its plans. Use your superhuman abilities to run, jump, slide, and put hundreds of objects as projectile weapons to blast everything in your path. In this funny and chaotic first-person telekinetic brawler, Stop Dead.
That is that is a new one. First-person telekinetic brawler.
Wow.
I'll give them credit for that one. That one I've not seen before.
It sounds like Star Wars Masters of Terry Cassie on the PS1. Hopefully it's slightly better than that, but you never know. RGT, what's next?
Sweet Dreams, Alex PC, October 5th. Alex is still small, but her dreams are big. You are her dream builder, tasked with constructing labyrinths full of distractions to keep nightmares away until a morning comes. Sweet Dreams Alex is a wholesome puzzle and construction game filled to the brim with atmosphere and charm.
Okay. It feels like It feels like many, many years ago when me and the original co-host Tom were talking about Wargroove in games that we were hyping up. But Wargroove 2 has come along, jumped out the grass, slapped us in the face, jumped back down again and assumed the sniper position October the 5th. Trouble stirs on the shores of Aronia. Can't be right. Sounds like the sort of thing I'd get charged with. An ambitious new faction is on a forbidden relics game. How far will they go to achieve war? Back to the battlefield, sea and sky, with a cast of new commanders using your wits to wage turn-based war. In all seriousness. In all seriousness, Wargroove 2 set to be quite the game to take on the go. Very excited for that. And while I'm here and I'm feeling cheeky, Detective Pikachu returns. Switch. This is my mummy. What was I thinking? Hyping anything other than something on Nintendo's greatest platform. October 6th, get to the bottom of an intriguing mystery and Detective Pikachu returns on Nintendo Switch. I might get this. Obviously, I'm legally obliged if it's my mummy. Join the detective in question, his cohort Tim, to help solve the riddle of his missing partner, along with other curious incidents occurring within Rhyme City. Now, my version of Ray's tapping his watch, he says, hang on a minute. This Ruth energy doesn't get itself made, you know, and he's got some baking powder and Pro Plus tablets. It doesn't look like it's healthy, but it certainly looks like it's going to be cheap. Before he slips off back to his mixing lab to create some more of that, we need to pick a retro movie or some movie that means something to us. We're going to pick it out of his boot. I'm going to go with, I don't know why I'm doing this to myself, but I'm going to go with a cam copy. I don't know why I'm doing this, because it's readily available on DVD of Jeeves and Wooster, the 90s. Wow. TV throwback classic of the P.G. Woodhouse tale starring Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry. If the quality weren't bad enough, I've got a cam copy of it recorded through someone in the village's window on Stingray's Nokia. quality holds no bounds here on the show.
It's more of an audio book, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, one day Harvey Retro just jumped up, span around, sat down, sent a little ditty. Oh, I love a little bit of Jeeves and Wooster. Simran, what's your retro VHS pick out the boot?
Oh, okay. Technically, I think it came to VHS. So I'm going to say,
even if it didn't, Ray'll have it.
It's not super retro, but for me, it's a cult classic. It's a British cult classic, Shaun of the Dead.
Perfect.
I tell you what, he's got a very bad DVD copy of that, so you should be well happy. RGT. You've plunged your finger in this boot more times than I care to mention. What are you pulling out this week?
I'm going to go with a VHS that Mrs. RGT actually purchased yesterday from Retro Realm in Ipswich. I'm not plugging them, they're not sponsoring us, but it's a fantastic little retro video game shop, so pop in. Yeah, she got
unbelievable.
This.
Unbelievable.
See an opportunity, take an opportunity.
Obviously.
This is The Frighteners. So we're going to watch that on VHS later. So
I love The Frighteners.
Yes.
Well, Michael J. Fox.
Yeah. She got The Frighteners and she got Stir of Echoes, but we're going to watch Frighteners. So.
Peter Jackson movie as well. So obviously, if you're a Lord of the Rings aficionado, Simran, unless you've seen The Frighteners, one has to wonder, what are you doing, Frank? He's nodding. He's on Amazon. He can't order it quick enough.
Just watch the VHS player.
Totally not just Googling in the background here.
Absolutely brilliant film. And you can see elements of where the evolution of Weta Studios as well. So it's definitely, even from an historic point of view, even though it's a great film, it's got some cinematic history built within its walls as well. With that all said and done, I turn around, and as magically as he appeared, he is gone. The only thing left on the floor is some powder that I assume is from his fake Wraith energy, and a ticket to Formot at the Farmerton Methodist Village Hall. One imagines that as far as nightlife goes, it's got nothing on the real deal. Let's, before we ask each other what we're hoping to play this week, just remind ourselves, Format. Where is it, Simran?
It is in God's greatest city, Manchester, on October 26th at the iconic Manchester venue, Impossible Manchester.
And if these people aren't clued enough to be in the Discord, if they're not following us on Instagram, Twitter, wherever else, where would they go to follow you, get the latest updates for the format event, and get tickets, most importantly, so they can actually rock up? Because this is ticket only, I believe.
Yes, this is ticket only. There, we do not take walk-ins. You do have to get your tickets on the door, or you do have to buy your tickets digitally. So, and I've made this so easy for everyone. Just type format.gg into an internet browser, and not only will you get all of our links, you can buy every ticket that you can imagine for the event on our website, or just type format.gg and we'll come up. It is format.gg on absolutely everything. Twitter, format.gg, Facebook, format.gg, Instagram, format.gg. Nice, simple one for you.
Nice and simple.
Perfect.
Now, that's the place to go to follow. Still things being announced, I'd imagine, right up until the close of play. Lots of exciting exclusive you mentioned here. They're going to get their pump on Instagram. They're also going to be able to click on the link there, whiff you off to the area. Not wanting to turn it into a railroad for us, but obviously if you want to get the chance to meet us, lots of other creators as well going there. So if you're a fan of them on Twitch or wherever else is you watch your creators, check the format Instagram or website, because it's going to detail there all your favorite content creators so you can meet and greet them in person. Can meet you as well, Simran One would imagine, if they want to.
Yes, I will be there. I will be in costume also tonight because I'm going all out for this. I will have my staff lanyard on so you can identify me. I will say I am like Sonic the Hedgehog at this event because I run around absolutely crazy throughout the whole thing.
But one would like to make a request that you two turn up as your perception of Ray.
But you see, I kind of wanted to be like, and like, you know, just match his cosplay of his trench coat, like, you know, and just be put on an FBI watch list. That's kind of what I wanted to do. But no, I tell you what, here's one more exclusive for you. Go on, I may as well do it. I will be dressing as good old Julius Caesar. And if you do see me, I do have a very serious face on the night. I won't bite your head off. Please do come up and say hello, because I always make time to say hello to someone, even despite the fact I'm running around like a madman dressed as Julius Caesar.
Wow. Okay. I don't even know how I'm going to level up to that. I probably won't imagine that at this point I can't, so I'll just turn up as me. Very excited to meet, obviously, many listeners there. Very excited to meet the developers, yourself, other content creators, general gamers. Have a little bit of a Gin and Wraith energy. Why not at this point? We might as well.
People have mixed all sorts together. Now, I am not legally responsible for what happens to you. I have seen people mix gin, whiskey with Wraith. Again, I've heard mixed things, but again, I'm not responsible for what happens for you. But I will say people have mixed it and they are open to that.
Last person that did that woke up as an adopted pharmacist's son in Happy Valley in Yorkshire, seemingly unknown to himself that he's of Bulgarian origin. So just be careful. With all that said and done, Simran.
I will say one thing also, Format does have its own energy drink also, and we are working on another one with Wraith Energy behind the scenes as well. If you are there, please make sure to try, and you do want a Wraith Energy, try Formango, our own in-house energy drink as well. You will love it.
Mumsy, get the credit card. Get me 6 metric tons. Yeah, one of those tunny gravel bags. I want it filled with Format Energy, Wraith Energy drink. Yeah. I'm going to look like... Matey out of Scarface, I think. I forget his name. Someone much cooler than me would know it, but, you know.
I'll tell you a funny story before I close. So there was one attendee who I saw, and I thought this individual had been up to no good at the event. Like, they were very, very, like, energetic. Their eyes were very wide. I was watching this individual, for those that can decipher the innuendo. I was a little bit like, right, okay, let me watch this individual. It turned out this individual had just literally consumed the equivalent of 2 full bottles of water of Wraith Energy and mixed all their flavors together. And this person, I kid you not, was literally bouncing off the walls.
They're probably still awake now. Probably in a perpetual
wake. I will explain, please don't mix every single energy drink together, because you will not sleep for about 5 days.
Wow. Sounds like the staple diet of a 13-year-old. With all that said and done, there's only one thing left on the table. Again, thank you so much for joining us, but we must ask each other what we're hoping to play. Simran, this gaming week, is it more Baldur's Gate 3 or is there going to be something else slipping into your rotation?
It probably will be Baldur's Gate this time around, only because I want to give Starfield the time it deserves. I don't want my mind to be distracted with event planning, so it probably will be more Baldur's Gate. And then once the event is done, I will be jumping into Starfield.
Okay. I think once the event's done, you deserve just to take some time out.
Yeah.
Put some glow-in-the-dark stars on your bedroom wall and just go full Starfield.
Yeah, I'm going to be taking a lot of time off after this event. It's the last few events of the year now, so I get my time to chill. So I will try before I probably start planning the next one a week later.
Wow. Okay. No rest for the wicked. RGT, what are you hoping to play? Answer G1 Jockey, moving on. No.
It will be G1 Jockey, but not in jockey silks and not live streaming. And also Final Fantasy 16, more EAFC 24, get right into that. Bit more game deck, maybe get that wrapped up this week. And also don't forget, over on my YouTube channel, Retro Gamer Thomas, we will be doing the unofficial controller playthrough of GTA 3. And that is 7:30 every Wednesday with me and Bald Border from the Discord. So come jump on there, come and say hi and to see how bad at games that we really are.
Okay, it's not a pre-qualification for podcasting. In fact, being terrible at games is the only qualification needed for podcasting.
That's why we talk about them, because we can't play them.
Those that can talk about them. Those that can't. Oh, dear. right, so I'm going to play a little bit more Resident Evil. Zero, no doubt I'm going to be enjoying that, as I have been. I've got myself
on Switch, you're playing that. Is it Switch you said you're playing it? I'm not joking, I'm being serious.
Yes, I do have it on there. It's a great game to take on the game.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Does it play well on the Switch?
Yeah, it plays perfectly. I mean, it's, you know, easily achievable on there. Even the remastered version, it's certainly capable of, you know, good picture, controls feel good. The only thing holding it back, obviously, is its historic roots back to its original incarnation on the GameCube. But they've tried their best.
Is it Origins, did you say?
And there's a bit of an awkward section at the moment where I'm meeting one of the steps towards the end of the game. And I've really pretty much only got a pistol. And it's quite a long time after a save point as well. So it's quite annoying to have to go back, sort your inventory out, do all these cutscenes, and then get slashed down in the first minute to go through that whole ordeal again.
Yeah,
it's quite unrewarding. But that's Resident Evil for you. Mm. With all that said and done, the only thing we've got left to do is turn back to our guests and thank them very much for their time. Is there anywhere on the socials that people might be able to find you, Simran, you personally, or is it just all about the format for you?
If you want to follow me, sure thing. I am literally just an absolute brand account for format, so you will just get the exact same stuff from the format account. And you will get a lot of food pictures. Like, I am a foodie, so you will get a lot of that. But if my foodie does interest you or you want to see more format, it is literally my name, Simran Whittam. That is my name on every single social platform. I'm very easy to find. And then I'm at FormatGG if you want any of the social updates. And again, I do eat a lot of good food. So if you are a food whore, I am the person to follow.
Maybe they could check you out as a medium of sort of lengthening their stay in Manchester after Format, and they can go check out some of these restaurants and bars where you've eaten these delicious delicatessen.
I actually already have one creator who has travelled all the way from Ireland, and she is demanding that I take her to some of the food that she sees on my Instagram stories. So I've already, if you want to be part of that little group that I take on Simran's food adventures, let me know.
Fantastic.
Perfect. And before we let you go, just remind everybody about the date and the best place to get tickets one last time.
Of course. So as I said, Format is three different events, and two of our events are open to the public, which is Format, the Ultimate Gaming Social, our main marquee event, which is the one that you must be at, which is on October 26th. And we have our after party, which tickets have gone over 60% sold out now in the last 24 hours. So I will say, if you want a ticket to the after party, you must get one while you can. And that is on October 27th at Pixel Bar Manchester, all of which you can find tickets to on our website, or you can find tickets on our Skiddle page as well.
Perfect. Okay. Well, thank you again so much for joining us, taking some time out during this very busy phase to sit with a couple of aging gaming weirdos, one of them which is now known as a park pervert, me, I'm not even in control of my own mouth, seemingly, but that's all good. Thank you one more time. And to everyone out there who's listening, if you're even slightly curious, if you're sat there thinking, but I daren't, but I'm a gamer, get a grip of yourself. This has been purpose-built for you. It's got literal handrails on the way in to guide you through the whole experience. Drink, no drink. Talk, no talk. Video game, no video game. Music, no music. It's got safe space. It's got chill-out area. It's got everything you could possibly imagine. And to be honest with you, imagine being that gamer at work. Everyone's like, oh, look at that nerd. You're rocking up. What did you do? Oh, I've been at Format. Exclusive VIP event. Ticket-only event. Very exclusive. I'm a gamer now. I have friends. I mix. I even did a little bit of a boogie on the dance floor. Nay, am I a gamer anymore? I'm practically just the coolest person in town. If you want that moniker, the only way you're going to achieve it is by attending Format. We want to see you there. See Simran there as an interesting historical figure, if I may add. RGT is going to be in his flasher Mac. I'm probably just going to be wearing a baseball jersey. Very odd thing to do. And again, thank you, Simran, for joining us. Thank you, everyone, for listening. That's all we have time for this week, listeners. Thank you for your time. We look forward to the pleasure of speaking to you again next week. Until then, happy gaming. And remember, there's nothing wrong with being given the unofficial controller. It's what you do with it that counts. See you, guys.
See you later.
See you in a bit.